The weather is finally getting warmer, so it's time to say goodbye to jackets and sweaters and hello to shorts and tees. I wanted to update my wardrobe for the long haul without spending a fortune. Luckily, I found Quince. Now I've got a lineup of timeless pieces that keep me looking effortlessly chic year after year, like premium European linen dresses, blouses, and shorts from $30. Washable silk tops, timeless 14-karat gold jewelry, and so much more. The best part? All Quince items are priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. By partnering directly with top factories, Quince cuts out the cost like the middleman that passes the savings on to us. And Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing practices and premium fabrics and finishes. I love that. I am so excited. I have two gorgeous lightweight cashmere sweaters coming my way, one camel, one heather gray. I cannot wait to wear them in the warmer months when it's chilly in LA. Throwing them over my shoulders, going to look so cute. Can't wait. Get warm weather ready with Quince. Go to quince.com/judgingmegan for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's quince.com/judgingmegan to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/judgingmegan. And now back to the podcast.
Shout out to Claritin for supporting this episode and providing us with samples.
Anyone else feel like they're talking like this time of year and sneezing and coughing and annoying your family while you're watching TV like I'm sure I do?
Well, yeah, I know that I am because my kids tend to tell me. Luckily for those of us who live with these symptoms of allergies, we can live Claritin Clear with Claritin D. Designed for serious allergy sufferers, Claritin D has two powerful ingredients in just one pill that relieve your allergy symptoms and decongest your nose so you can breathe better. This double action combination of prescription strength allergy medicine and the best decongestant available relieves sneezing, a runny nose, itchy and watery eyes, and itchy nose and throat and sinus congestion and pressure with ease in as little as a half an hour, by the way. Ready to live life as if you don't have allergies? It's time to live Claritin Clear. Fast and powerful relief is just a quick trip away. Find Claritin D at the pharmacy counter. Ask for Claritin D at your local pharmacy counter. You don't even need a prescription. Go to Claritin.com right now for a discount so you can live Claritin Clear. Use as directed.
So I talk a lot about how much therapy saved my life and how lucky I am to have my amazing therapist, Dr. Nay. But not everybody can get an appointment with Dr. Nay, and I really wanted to break the stigma on getting help or asking for help. So that is why I partnered with a company called online-therapy.com. They have plans that start around $30 a week, and you can get weekly therapy sessions for less than $50 a week. You can also get my 20% off code by going to my website, judgingmegan.com, and you go to the therapy tab. And if you click on the link at the bottom, you can get 20% off your first month. Hi, everyone. So I just wanted to let you know that today's episode or this week's episode does have some technical issues. So you might notice that the sound is off a few times. I absolutely needed for you all to hear Danny's story. And there was a part of me that said, oh, let me just get in touch with Danny and re-record this episode. But I just felt like I needed to put out what we talked about, and it is a very special episode to me. She's a very incredible lady, and I hope that you guys can kind of overlook the few technical issues that we had this week with our sound and forgive me and enjoy this episode and enjoy this wonderful woman, and hopefully she can teach us all a thing or two about what's important in life, because I know she taught me something. So enjoy this week's episode of Judging Megan. Well, hello, everyone. I am just going to tell you right now, I am once again out on a little trip. I'm hoping that children don't walk in throughout the episode. I'm also hoping that the three dogs that are in this house, so our friend's dog is with us, and then RBG is my dog, to my guest Danny, who's on right now. Ruth Bader Ginsburg is my dog, but I also call her Jurassic Park. Oh, she's the worst dog I've ever had in my life. And then Rosie is my other. And so I have two labs. And all they've been doing is barking. They're going crazy. We got to the desert. So we're in Parker, Arizona. We actually come here all the time. We have a house. We've been coming here. My husband's been coming here since he was a kid. So it's a teeny tiny house on the water. It is literally 110 degrees Arizona hot heat, like hot, hot, hot. We get here yesterday, okay, and the AC was broken in the house. So we
drove. Of course.
Yeah, of course, right? So we drove for it takes like 4.5-5 hours. There was LA traffic. So it took us like over 5 hours. We get here, we open the door, and I literally was like, it was hot. It was hotter inside than it was outside. And it's that dry heat. So it's not the humidity on the East Coast, but it's like this dry heat. And I was like, I don't know. My listeners would probably guess this. And Danny, my guest that's on right now, my new guest who I love, I can already tell you I love her. Well, I just want you to know I'm not the most calm person on the planet when things go wrong. I know that's shocking to everybody, but I kind of looked at my husband and I was like, so what are we going to do? And because I wasn't going to stay in that hot house. So then, thank God, our friends show up like 10 minutes later. They're like, we know a realtor in the area. We're just going to rent. We're renting a house. We don't care how much it costs. So like, way to reframe, okay? Because what happened was we now are in a house that has a pool. It's right on the water. So, I mean, I really can't explain. I am so excited for you to come on. You and I met when we both, like we didn't really meet physically, but we met when we both began podcasting. So
yes,
we were in like, I think we were in like a pod. I meet a lot of my guests this way and have made a lot of friends this way, but like, I think we were on She Podcasts or one of the groups, and we kind of were like, oh, let's listen to each other's podcast. There were like four of us.
Yes. Then, yes. I remember that.
And then I listened to yours and you listened to mine. And then the other two people like dropped off. I never heard from them again.
Right? Yeah, neither did I. Neither did I. Yeah.
Okay, but then you and I have kept in touch over the past year, because it's been about a year. I'm almost on my year anniversary. Yeah. I started in October. So August, September.
So I started late December. Yeah. Right around the same time. Yeah. November, yeah. December. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's funny because we will like message each other over the past like however many months and check in, and you're like, you're just a cool lady, and I can already tell that about you. So thank you, Danny, for coming on.
You're so kind. You're so welcome. And I think you're awesome too. I was on the Instagram Live yesterday with you and Diane. Oh, you guys are you're just amazing. And Diane is amazing too. But,
She's the best. And I'm sorry, I couldn't, like, I need my glasses and I can't, the worst thing about those Instagram Lives is when you can't see, because I'm in denial about the fact that I'm trying to fight the fact that I have to wear glasses to be able to see. And I'm so vain. I don't like the way I look in glasses. So when I'm on those Instagram Lives, I'm constantly like taking on and off my glasses and trying to like pose and look good. And it's just not, I have to know that it's time to accept that I have to wear glasses, but I couldn't see who was on. So thank you for coming on. That's so sweet of you.
You're welcome. Of course. Anything to support you, Megan. Anything to support you.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I'm excited to see your beautiful face in person over the camera. We're not together, but I wanted to have you on because I think the topic is, as females, that we're going to talk about today is so, so, so important. And so many women have dealt with this, including myself. And I just can't wait to dive in and talk to you. So why don't we just like kind of get right into it? Danny, yeah. Tell me your story. Where are you from? I want to know exactly like as much about Danny as my listeners can possibly know.
I am from a place that I call Slower Lower Delaware. I was born in Lewis, Delaware. Do you know where Delaware is?
Honey, I know where Delaware is. You know where I you know where I used to spend my summers in Bethany Beach and Dewey.
Oh, yeah. You know exactly where I was born then, on the beach, yeah, Lewis Beach, Delaware.
Drive through Lewis, right? Yes. To get through. Mm-hmm. It's a very small, is it a small town? Am I remembering?
Very right? Small town, like a square inch small, but yeah, very small.
Mm-hmm. And you can't speed through Lewis, right?
Don't no, you can't.
Okay.
So I everywhere. Think yeah.
Tickets in yeah. Lewis, Delaware.
Yeah. Yeah. We've all gotten tickets in Lewis, Delaware. All of us. Okay. So, okay. Hey, welcome to Lewis, what? Delaware.
I knew I liked you because you're an East Coaster. You're one
I'm
of my
East Coaster. Yeah. And I'm a beach bum. I love the beach. Probably because I was born on the beach. Yeah. So I'm from Delaware. I lived all over Delaware. I have six brothers, two sisters. Six brothers, two sisters. I'm the second oldest.
Gosh.
Yep. I'm the second in the family. I have about 30 nieces and nephews right now. We're very much a procreation type of family.
Sounds like it.
Yeah.
Wait, are all of those brothers and sisters from one mom?
No, no.
Okay.
Six of them are, the other three are not. Yes.
I just mm-hmm. don't understand how my mom I consider myself from a large family too, but I was one. Technically, my mom had five babies, but mm-hmm, one passed. So, but even being from four these days, I'm like, how do people even do that? So to hear six, I mean, my mom's one of six, and then adding your, it's unbelievable that women are able to mm-hmm. deliver that many babies. It's mm-hmm, crazy. Mm-hmm, I don't mm-hmm. know how people do it, but
I don't.
Congratulations.
I don't know how to do it either.
Mom. God bless her.
God bless her. Exactly. definitely. Because actually, I never wanted kids. But I wound up with two beautiful kids. My son is 28 and my little Zoe is 2.5 now.
Okay. So you spread that. You really have a span of mm-hmm. having your kids. So that mm-hmm. in itself is like a whole podcast. How you even...
Oh, right. My gosh. Starting all over, having a different perspective on parenting and life and energy levels and food. And oh, my goodness, it's completely, completely different. And so yes,
you had your first baby. I'm sorry to skip ahead, but you had your first baby very, very, very young.
Yeah, very young. I was pregnant the summer I graduated from high school and had him. Of course, 10 months later. But yeah, I was on my way to the military, actually. I hadn't had sex at all. I had made it through high school. I hadn't had sex. And my very first real boyfriend got pregnant on my very first time and found out at my medical physical for entering the armed forces that I was pregnant. So I had to make that choice between giving up custody of my child or actually going through and having a baby at 18 years old.
Wow.
Yeah. And
how
so
was that? And to backpedal a little bit, I'm sorry, because I kind of
it's
like
okay.
It seems like did you have like a happy childhood? What no. Okay.
No, not at all. Yeah, I you know that ACEs study, you did a podcast about that. I remember going through that checklist years and years ago and saying, man, I checked off every single thing, physical, emotional, neglect, sexual abuse, repeated sexual abuse. I went through all those things. And I told myself that if I, that I would never have kids if I was ever going to be honestly like my parents or like other people in my circle. It was a very painful experience for me. I look back on my childhood and I don't remember moments of joy, you know, and if there were moments of joy, they were fleeting, like seeing the Christmas tree with all the presents underneath of it. But then 10 seconds later, your father attacks your mother because he's drunk, or they have a fight, or the tree gets burned down, or the house the house catches on fire, or something of that nature.
You've been through all of that. You've been through
all of that. All of that. Mm-hmm. And I was in denial about a long time until, because we just kind of went about our lives, you know, we just survived, you know, the house almost burnt down, or if you got beat up the night before, you just got up the next day and you went to school, you know. It wasn't until my oldest brother, he went to prison. He was wrongfully convicted about the same year my son was born, 1993, but he went to prison for 10, 15 years on a wrongful conviction. But when he came home, he just hugged me and he said, I remember everything too. I remember the abuse. And for me, it was like such validation, because I was like, oh, it did happen. You know, I'm not crazy. All of those things I went through that I never got to talk to, there was somebody who shared the experience and could remember the experience.
It's really interesting. So you blocked it all out. And I'm so sorry to hear about your brother too, because I actually have a episode coming up about prison reform. And
good.
And that's a whole separate topic. And there's so many people, specifically Black men, that go away wrong. And it's just that could be a 5-hour long episode, but I am so sorry to hear that he experienced that. It's so wrong. And I'm hoping that we can make changes on that, because it's something that should never happen. I mean, it should never happen. And then on top of that, just the fact that you both were in, you all, I'm assuming all of your siblings went through sexual abuse, mental abuse, physical abuse. I mean, mm-hmm. The fact that people are able to go on, and obviously you are an ace like I am, but I didn't have the same experiences that you. Mm-hmm. And part of the reason why I do this is so maybe a listener out there is listening and can understand that it's okay to talk about this and get help and get therapy. Have you been able to get, I mean, I know that you're very into yoga now, and it seems like you have your act together. Have you been
life?
Oh yeah. Not when I was younger, because in our community, you just get over it. You know, it's like, oh,
totally. You know, I did an episode about this actually.
Yeah, you did. Yeah. Exactly. Actually, in the community, it's just like you get over it. Oh, you know, everybody goes through something. You know, I remember, you know, trying to tell my teachers things were happening, or I remember an aunt of mine witnessing me getting a beating. Doing nothing about it. I remember, you know, writing letters to people. Nobody responded. So it's like I was by myself, very isolated, very much so. And it wasn't until years later where I could no longer function. You know, I should back up and say that school became very much a safe haven for me, because I'm very intellectual. I love learning and I read a lot. So a lot of my escape was hiding in closets, reading books, or, you know, going to the library and listening to stories being told, things of that nature. So that was my safe haven. And as long as I could do that, I was okay, you know. And not only that, that was my validation from a lot of people. Oh, she's so smart. She's so bright. She's this, she's that, you know. So I did that naturally, but it became my source of approval from my family. So years later, I finally crashed after years of promiscuity and repeat pregnancies and abortions. I got engaged to a man and had a miscarriage. He left me. I lost my job at that same time. I had went to medical school, and all of that came crashing down at the same time. So I wound up in therapy for 6 months, but I wound up in therapy because I tried to commit suicide. My best friend found me because I told her, I said, I just don't want to live anymore. I just want to go to sleep. And she took it to heart. And she's like, wait a minute, that didn't sound right. So she came to my house. I had prepared some food for my son, and I went into my bedroom and I had made a cocktail of pills. Thank you for the medical school class in pharmacy. Mm-hmm. I learned how to make little cocktails, and I started to take those pills, and she found me. I wasn't quite out of it yet, but I was on my way. And by the grace of the universe, the grace of God, I got to the hospital in time. They did their test and they said, we're either going to admit you involuntarily or you have to agree to come into an outpatient program the next day. And that's what I did. So I spent 6 months. It seemed like a long time, but I spent my days in outpatient therapy. I was in group therapy. I was in drama therapy. I did cognitive behavioral therapy. And I can say that the group therapy was the best thing for me because I had a female therapist, I had a male therapist, and I had all what I call my brothers and sisters who were trying to overcome some things. And it was kind of like a family setting. And it was the first time I was able to speak about some of the things that happened to me in my past and feel safe about it and to feel heard and to feel validated for those particular feelings I was having. And I realized at that particular point that I wasn't damaged beyond repair. Does that make sense? What I just said.
I'm sorry, I almost cry. I do know you now, but I'm just so proud of you. When I hear stories of people that have picked themselves up and overcome the most horrible, horrific things in life and been able to just be like, I need help. I'm going into therapy. That's part of why I do this podcast, is because I was also suicidal. And and I made the choice to pick myself up and go on. I never where you were, but the more people and the more messaging that we can get out there about people admitting that they need to get help. And I obviously am a white woman. I will never understand what it's like to be in the Black community. I'm obviously an ally and a friend, and it's so important to me that things change in our society. There's a lot of people that are out there that want everything to be equal for everybody, and I'm one of them. But I do know the amount of, just from reading, from doing a prior podcast with a Black man named Abraham Scully, and he also was suicidal, and he was like being told, you're fine. You're not supposed to get therapy. That's not accepted in our community. It's not okay. And in hearing your story of just like, how much can somebody take? I know that my own path in life and what I've taken, and it's nothing compared to what you have been through. And I just want you to know that. And I'm sorry, I'm crying too, but I'm just so proud of you that you pulled yourself through this and you've gotten to this point and you're here and you're doing something with your life and you're helping people. And you're helping people right now by telling this story. So thank you.
You're welcome.
I just wanted
I wasn't going to do this today. Thank you.
You know what? I'm the one that's like crying. So it's okay. Thank you for telling your story. I know there's listeners out there. I hear from them. And when you share these things, you never know. There could be somebody out there, Danny, right now, that's really going through something like similar to what you went through. And they're trying to figure out a cocktail to off themselves, and just listening to something like this could help one person. You never know, or it could help a friend.
I hope so. I do. I really hope so. And that's why I realized that I had to, stop isolating, and I had to start speaking about this, because not only is it helping me, it's going to help other people. I don't want any other little girl on the planet, any other little boy on the planet, anybody to go through the things that I went through. Those particular things did shape me, you know. But
they don't define me.
But they don't define me. Yes. Yeah. Yes. And just like you said, you pulled yourself up. You know, I remember my mom asking me later when we had a nice heart to heart conversation about some things that happened to me. How did you get through it? You know, how did you do this? You know, how did you go on to medical school and, you know, travel the world and do all these particular things? I said, I decided that I wanted something different. My son was a big motivator. If I had not had my son, I'd be dead. I'm 100% sure that I'd be dead, because I look at him and say, okay, he deserves something different. He deserves something different. And I gave him something different, you know.
I just want you to know I can relate to that, because I've openly talked about it on the podcast. I've told this story. I was on the beach. We're both beach girls. I live at the beach too. And I was looking out at the ocean, and I've told this story now numerous times on the podcast, and I saw my daughters, and I was just in the darkest, darkest part of my life, darkest days. Didn't see, and I'm so fortunate to have my two babies that I love so much and my husband, but I was in so much pain. Mm-hmm. And I looked at them and I was like, I don't want to go on. But then they're also the reason why I chose to go on, and I chose to make the choice that they're like, I'm going to shift my life and do something that will hopefully help somebody else. And that's what it sounds like you're doing too. And so we're so lucky that we were given these souls that are our children, that are put into our lives, that are kind of, a lot of times they're like, even though mine are horribly behaved right now, and I like yelled at one of them, you heard me. I was like, get out.
mom life.
But they're like souls that are put into our lives to help, to guide us.
My son was that for me.
Mm-hmm. Then what did you do? So then once you got to that point, you were in medical school. Did you stay in medical school? Tell me what happened.
No, I had to leave medical school because I had to make a decision on whether I was single. My ex-husband and I had split up long before I got to medical school, but I had to make a decision on whether I could invest that amount of energy and time into school and still be the type of mom I wanted to be. And I couldn't. So I decided to go into scientific research. I worked in cancer research for 20 years. And
you
then
sound like you're really, really stupid. I'm so sorry.
I am.
Me too. No, that's really remarkable and amazing. Good for you.
Well, thank you. It came naturally. It wasn't my first choice or my first love, but you know, it paid the bills and it served me well. It served its purpose. And then I decided that I was going to become a yoga professional, and because I was tired, because of course intellectual life was where I ran for safety, because I was smart, you know, that was my safe place. You know, a lot of times you run to places that can keep you, and you don't want to deal with the other things, you know. But I got to a point where I could no longer deal with the other things. You know, there were some continual stressors in my life. There were continual abusive relationships. I still had a pattern of choosing men that were not healthy for me, and I wasn't in the healthiest place. And so one summer I decided to take up yoga and change the directory of my professional life. And so I became a yoga.
I need to stop you right here. Because offline, we have talked about, you told me, because we both actually like you got, we, I'm, I hate to skip ahead, but I was diagnosed with complex PTSD. I'm very open.
So
with
was
it.
I. Mm-hmm.
And then Dani told me that she was as well. And this is a new diagnosis. Mm-hmm. But I was talking to you and I was like, oh my God, I cannot do yoga. Like, I'm one of those people that I can't even get a massage. Like, if I'm on the table, my mind races. Mm-hmm. And so if I do yoga, I tend to like stare at the clock because I can't calm myself. But I know just because I have so much anxiety, I'm supposed to be doing it. But I'm so impressed that you made the shift into doing something like yoga, because I know how good it is for people that have been diagnosed with, you know, PTSD, complex PTSD, mm-hmm, or any mm-hmm. kind of anxiety or depression, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes, it is. So I should back up. There's a backstory to that.
No, that's okay.
The reason I started practicing yoga is because I developed cervical cancer in my early 20s. And I found this amazing book called 8 Steps to Optimal Health or something like that by Dr. Andrew Weil, W-E-I-L. I always say his name wrong. So forgive me, Dr. Weil, if I'm pronouncing it wrong. But that's where I learned about breath work. And that's where I learned about yoga, from a book. So that summer, after I was diagnosed, they told me there was a chance that the condition would reverse. And so as a nerd, I just kind of did my research, like, well, what do I do? How can I improve my immune system and yada, yada, yada. So that summer I was away from the family for about 6 weeks doing an internship at Texas Children's Hospital. And I picked up that book and I implemented all those steps in that book. And yoga became the thing that saved my life over and over again. Every time I was in an abusive relationship, or every time I got sick, or every time there was a stressor, every time I would get pregnant and have an abortion, or not know how to process it. And I would get on my mat. It became my very safe place. And eventually I got to a point where I could not live without my yoga practice. And that's why I went into a teacher training, because I wanted more of that. I didn't think I was going to become a yoga teacher. It was just more to intensify my practice. And I loved it. I loved it. The practicum was awesome. I was like, oh, I could do this. So I remember being on my yoga mat one morning, because I like to practice outside. And I said, God, you know, I'm so tired of being in the science world. That was where I ran. If you just open a door for me, I'm out. I'm going through it. And the next day, my trainer called me and said, hey, there's a teaching position open at the School of Public Health at Temple University in Philadelphia. Are you interested? I said, teaching yoga? She's like, yeah, teaching yoga. Hey, all right, I'm in. And so I never looked back. Started my own wellness company, got certified as a life coach. Then became a doula later on in life after I had Zoe, because a doula saved my life again.
Yeah.
I lost my train of thought, Megan.
No, that's okay. I'm amazed by your story. I love mm-hmm. your story. I say this a lot to guests. And I wonder if my listeners are like, okay. But sometimes I hear people come on and I'm like, you're supposed to be writing a book. You're supposed to be, I just like feel that what you're doing is so important, and ways for people to be able to pick themselves up and find new things. Like maybe one thing doesn't work. And I think of myself, when I was young, I would always go into characters. I'm very right-brained, and I mm-hmm. would sing and dance, and I would go in my closet and mm-hmm. And pretend like I was somewhere else. I was mm-hmm. never into books, probably until pretty recently. I read a lot because of my guests, but mm-hmm. And it's actually been really therapeutic and good for mm-hmm. me, to be honest. Mm-hmm. But what's for you is you escaped through reading books.
I did.
And educating yourself. And that's interesting that you did that. And then you ended up in your later life and you're still super young, but going into something more creative, which is mm-hmm. yoga, which mm-hmm. is interesting how people mm-hmm. find different paths, and your paths can always change, you mm-hmm. know?
Oh, definitely. I agree 100%. Yeah. And I really strongly believe that that creative piece was always part of who I was, but because of my life circumstances and my environment, that piece was not allowed to shine. And so now I feel like I'm coming into the fullness of myself. When I was little, I wanted to be an actress and a dancer. I was into cheerleading. Well,
you have the energy and the face for it and the figure for it. You're beautiful.
Oh, I appreciate that.
I wish people could see you because you are a bright, shining light. And I just know that about you, just seeing you and hearing you. Yeah.
You're so gracious. Thank you. I do believe that. I do believe that we have to keep seeking. You know, we have to keep seeking those things that feed us and fuel us and get over the fear of that seeking. You know, well, you know, we can get very comfortable and very content in our circumstances, but I don't think that's what life is about. I think it's about us continually growing, you know, and emotionally, physically, spiritually, you know, and using each day to overcome something, to heal something, and to give back to other people, you know.
I agree. Are you, we haven't touched on this yet, but I'm assuming, are you spiritual? You
believe I'm very spiritual.
Me too. Yeah.
I'm very spiritual. I believe in God. I'm not a religious person.
Okay.
But I do believe in God. I believe that there is something else, because how else am I still here? That's my 100%. Biggest question. Like, I survived all of that. How am I still here? There must be a purpose for me. It must be a purpose for all those particular events that happened in my life. And according to being, you know, if I'm an ace, I really shouldn't be here right now. I should have all kinds of illnesses and diseases and, you know, mentally gone already. But I'm still here.
Really quickly.
And I've had enough. Go
just
ahead.
In case my listeners missed my episode with Samantha from the 16 Strong Project, an ace, because I didn't explain this and I forgot I should be explaining this. So an ace is an adverse childhood experience. So that could include abuse, a alcoholic parent. There's a whole list of things. So they say that ACEs a lot of times end up, I've read up on it, sick, like a lot of times with cancer, like early diagnosis. It affects the rest of your life, and that's not to say it's a life sentence. You can get help. You can go into therapy. And like I've talked about numerous times, like my whole podcast is about my therapist who saved my life. Getting therapy saved my life. And I did realize that I was an ace and it's not a life sentence and you can go on. You just sometimes need to realize that you need to get help and you need to talk about it. And I don't know if you've ever done this before, Danny, but I'm about to start EMDR. I haven't started it yet. But have you done that?
I have not. Is that the therapy where you tap?
Yeah.
I have not done that. Okay. So we'll have to keep in contact. You let me know how that goes for you.
Yeah, I will. I'm actually starting it like in a few weeks. Just because like you, I have a lot of stuff that I've blocked out mm-hmm. that has come up in therapy. And I'm like, I'm forgetting stuff. I would rather have it come out, know that it happened, figure out a way to get through it and be able to go on with the rest of my days, right?
Yes.
Then just
yes.
push it down, right?
Yes. Yes. Because the more you do that, the better the more you connect with that, bring it up and heal those places, the more present you are for your children and everyone else, you know? That's one of my biggest motivating factors for staying on this path is now I have this little girl. You know,
okay, so let's talk about Zoe, who, by the way, I can't wait to post stuff, but and we're going to give her my Instagram is at Judging Megan. I mention it a lot. Danny, what's your Instagram? Because I want people to follow you.
I'm at Danny D. Dani Lee, L-E-E, Jernigan, J-E-R-N-I-G-A-N.
Okay, and I will post all of this in the show notes, but just seeing, and I'm going to post this picture of you and your gorgeous little girl, but I want to go now shift into this, your story about, I mean, we really uncovered a lot of stuff. You came on because I wanted to talk to you about postpartum depression, but I'm so thankful to you that you shared this story because I think it's so important for people to hear.
Yeah, I was in my early 40s. Still in my early 40s, I guess. I don't know. I forget how old I am.
I'm in my 40s too. Give it up for 40s.
Yes.
And by the way, you look like you're 25. So.
Oh, thank you. That's the yoga. That's the yoga and the vegan lifestyle. That's all that is.
Okay, I need to start yoga.
Yeah, it might be just the genetics too. My mom still looks really, really young. She's 68 and she looks like she's my sister. Yeah, so I got pregnant 42, 43 with my Zoe girl. And it was a really good pregnancy, actually. I mean, there were a lot of stressors in my life still. The relationship I was in was not a great relationship for me. Again, I chose someone who wasn't, you know, I chose from my wounds as opposed from the healthier place of me. It's, you know, that's one of the things you have to overcome when you're an ACE.
Are you still together? You're not still with a partner. Okay.
So no, that's another, ma'am.
That's part two podcast.
Yes, it is. Because, yeah, there's a whole nother story about that situation. Okay.
It's very common, by the way, for ACEs to have bad pickers.
Yeah, we do.
It's like not really your fault. I mean, I happen to be really lucky with my husband, but I met my husband in my 20s, but when I was in my early 20s, I was always looking for the wrong bad guy, not the guys that were nice to me. Yeah,
exactly. And the thing too was I was celibate for 4 years. I had given up everything. Like, okay, I just need to, because I can't get it right, so I'm just gonna leave it alone. And then I reconnected with this guy, Zoe's father, on Facebook and Facebook friends. And next thing you know, we were dating. And I mean, I'm really good friends with his sister. That's how I know him. So I kind of let my guard down a little bit more because I felt like he was safer because I know his sister. But anywho, wound up pregnant. Pregnancy was great. I still practice yoga. I was mostly vegan, but I had to have my chocolate almond milk every single day. And I wound up getting an infection and had to be treated for the infection 4 weeks before Zoe was due. The next week, I felt a really bad tug in my lower abdomen. And I was like, oh, that's kind of strange or whatever, you know. I thought maybe she was just shifting positions. And that night, she wasn't moving. Women know when their babies are moving, you know, like that 12 a.m. to 3 a.m. time frame.
Especially at the end of the pregnancy, you're like, you're constantly kicking. Yeah.
Yeah. I was like, she's not moving. What's going on? So I was like, I'll just, you know, shift positions. And she kicked a little bit. And so I went back to sleep. The next morning I was having the same phenomena and, I called the birth center and, I had a whole team of midwives and, I had a therapist already set up just in case I had postpartum depression again. I had a group set up already. But the midwife says to me, just drink some orange juice and do some kick counts. Just counter kicks for a couple of hours. I was like, no, my baby's not moving. I'm going to drink the orange juice, but on my way to you, I'll do the kick counts. So have that machine set up so that I can get on that machine.
So you didn't go to the hospital.
I went to the birth center. To have my baby.
Okay. Got it.
Yeah. Okay. And so they put me on the machine and they were like, oh, you're right. She's not really moving or breathing the way she should be. I was like, yeah, I'm right. I mean, what was that all about? So they sent me to the hospital. They did some more screens and her diaphragm wasn't working. Her diaphragm wasn't moving. So basically she wasn't breathing. So they induced me. So I was in labor for probably, so the pain happened Sunday night. I got induced Monday afternoon. She was born at 4:28 p.m. that Tuesday. Yeah, so I was in labor for about 2.5 days.
Oh, God.
And, yeah, I'm sorry. I'm having a moment. So I'm That's pushing. Okay. Yeah, I'm pushing, and the labor's going good. I have my doula there. I have my sister there. Her father was there holding my legs and doing what he does. She finally starts to crown, and I reach down, I touch her hair. And then I see the neonatal team come in. So the neonatal team came in with their cart, their heating lamp and all that kind of stuff. And I was like, ooh, this must be bad. But I kept pushing because she needed to come out, of course. And so she finally arrives, and I reach for her. But she doesn't give her to me. She's like, Danielle, she's blue and she's limp. And they take her and put her over with the neonatal team, and I couldn't do anything. So I'm hooked up to all these tubes. I couldn't get to my baby girl.
I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. That must have been so painful for somebody to experience that, because that's when your mother first meets their baby, it's one of the most, you know, like amazing experiences of your life. I'll never forget my moments of meeting my babies. So that's really hard.
Yeah. I said to her father, go stand near them, you know, be near her. One of us needs to be near her. So they're working on her, and she had pretty much no Apgar score. And 5 minutes later, she took her first breath. And they just said, oh, well, you know, sometimes it takes a while for the babies to warm up. And that was their way of consoling me at that particular moment. And I told her father, say something to her, because she hadn't opened her eyes. She took her breath, but she hadn't opened her eyes. I was like, say something to her. And he said, hey, love. And she opens her eyes just like big as day. And my heart just like raced. I was like, she's here. She's present. She made it. You know, she made it. And Love is her middle name, by the way. Zoe Love. Her middle name is Love.
Oh, I love that's one of my names. I love the name, really. It's a beautiful name.
Yeah, it is a beautiful name.
The love too.
Yeah. And so they bring her to me, and she's on my chest, and she's nursing, and things are going good. You know, everybody's checking my vitals and making sure I'm urinating and I'm pooping and I can get up and walk the next day and all those other things. But Megan, the thing is, no one asked me how I was mentally. No one said, are you okay? You just witnessed your baby not breathing, basically not alive. And no one thought to ask me, not one person. Are you okay? Do you want to talk about it? And I sat with that pain. I sat with that pain. Like, well, I should be grateful. She's here. She's alive. She's breathing. I should be grateful. Why am I harping on this one incident? And I realized, like, because it happened, you know, because it did happen. It hurt me. And it made me more paranoid, actually, about her. Like, I would not let her out of my sight. My anxiety levels were off the chain. I started feeling guilty about being in this relationship, contracting this infection, not going to the hospital soon enough. So my blues, my baby blues, turned into depression really quickly. And my anxiety.
What did you do? Like, because a lot of people don't realize that, I've had two kids with my first, definitely had postpartum depression. Mm-hmm. But I can't imagine what you went through. Is that's major, major trauma. Like seeing your own baby come out, almost die. And then there's nobody, they're just like, this is like a doctor's job. These are nurses' jobs. Their job is to just deliver the baby, give the baby to you, then you take the baby home and that's it. But you're right. There needs to be, I wish there was some, and maybe there is, but there needs to be some kind of like that comes in and talks to mothers right when they have their babies and kind of explains right away, this, you may be experiencing these things. If you are experiencing these things, if you are in pain, if you don't want to bond with your child, if you, whatever it is, maybe then things would change a little bit and women wouldn't have to go through this kind of like, right? Because I'm assuming you were feeling all these feelings of guilt, paranoia, you said.
Mm-hmm. Guilty, paranoid, anxious. I was crying a lot. I was very isolated. I stayed in my bedroom with her as much as I possibly could. I didn't even want her father to hold her because I was worried that she's going to stop breathing. You know, I would wake up in the middle of the night when she was sleeping, and if I didn't hear her stirring, like, is she breathing? You know, and God,
I remember feeling that way. It's the worst. Yeah, I wouldn't let anybody touch Sophie, my 11-year-old, and I was so crazy with like hand sanitizer, and I would sometimes just like go in her room and just like stare at her in the middle of the night, you know, just to make sure that her she was breathing.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. But the female brain does change too, because you go into survival mode, you know, everything else doesn't matter. You know, that's why we can forget things so easily when we're pregnant and in our postpartum phase, because our limbic system grows and accommodates having a new baby. So you're like keen on, okay, this could hurt the baby. That could hurt the baby. You know, we need to get that person out of here. No, that person can't come. That crib is too low or too high or whatever, because we are now biologically geared to make sure our child survives. Nothing else. That's it. There's an amazing book called The Female Brain, and it talks about the different phases of a woman's life and how her brain changes with pregnancy and postpartum. Very interesting. I tell my clients a lot to read that book because it validates them. You know, you're like, am I supposed to think like this? Am I supposed to act like that? Yeah, you are. Your brain changes. But then there's a degree to change as well. You know, there's that degree where you now need therapy. You now need help. You now are, you know, too paranoid. You know, there's okay to be cautious, but, you know,
it's a weird thing. It's a crazy thing. I don't know if you experience, because everybody experiences different. If you did experience postpartum, I experienced severe anxiety to the point where I would have thoughts like, what if somebody comes in my house in the middle of the night and they take a knife and they stab my baby? I would have the craziest, scariest thoughts, and I couldn't get them out of my head. So I'm assuming you felt the same way. It's like this crazy, like these crazy thoughts that come into your head and you can't get out of this prison, and you don't really know what to do because nobody tells you that this is
normal.
Normal, right?
Yeah. Yeah. In a sense, it's normal. Yes, it's very normal. And I did have those crazy thoughts. And thank you, Megan, for sharing that, you know, you had those thoughts, because a lot of people don't feel safe enough to say that they have these thoughts because they're afraid their children are going to get taken away from them or someone's going to put them in a mental institution. But I had thoughts like that. I had thoughts about me and Zoe dying together. You know, I had those fantasies in a sense. We should just, you know, die together. What if I, you know, can't be this good mom? I'll just, you know, I'll take her with me, you know, those type of thoughts. And I couldn't share that with people because they probably would put me in a mental institution or take my child away from me. But it was part of that postpartum depression, anxiety experience, you know. And the only reason I knew that I had postpartum depression is because I had it with my son. It manifested differently with him because I automatically went into survival mode. I was single. I'm trying to work, you know, so I suppressed all of that. But with hindsight,
very, very young.
I was very, very young. Yeah.
So you were very, very young. And obviously, like, our brain, like, our bodies change, our brains change. You had been done the work. You had gone through the therapy.
Mm-hmm.
When you were young, going through postpartum, you were still in that place, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So I knew, I recognized the signs within myself with Zoe, you know. And the thing is, you can recognize the signs in yourself and know that's what's going on with you, but sometimes you don't step out to get the help still because you're afraid of what people are going to say to you. You're afraid of the stigma, you know, especially again in our community, you know, to be labeled as crazy or you don't need help. Everyone goes through this. You'll get over it. I was afraid to do that. I was afraid to be rejected like that at that particular time in my life. I tried to go on with my life. Actually, I was working towards a PhD in psychology at that particular time. And I had to give all that up because, number one, Zoe was my biggest priority. I wanted to be present for her. But number two, I realized I couldn't handle it. I couldn't even remember whether I brushed my teeth that day. Like, how am I going to do a dissertation or write thesis papers every week? I can't do this. So it was a very, those first 3 months, I would say 6 months, was a very dark and very lonely place for me because I didn't have the people to talk to and to come support me and to just come take Zoe for a little while so I could get the much needed rest. And, you know, rest, not having rest, the absence of rest, the absence of good food and that support system aggravates your symptoms when you're depressed and when you're anxious, because now your body is like, oh, you're not feeding yourself, you're not sleeping well. You are literally putting yourself in a state of delusion because you're not taking care of yourself. And that was one of the things that drove me to become a doula, because I did have a doula. I had a postpartum doula, and she showed up at my house once a week. And those moments, that 1 hour, 2 hours that she was with me, I really think contributed to me actually taking the necessary steps to get the help that I needed, you know?
So what were the steps that you took? And also, there's a book, I don't remember what it's called, but it's Brooke Shields openly.
Oh, yes.
Openly talked about her horrible postpartum depression and how she wanted to at one point drive into a wall. And I give her kudos for that because, number one, she's a celebrity, and that's like nobody, like you said, nobody wants to admit these feelings. Nobody wants to. I remember being like in my head going like, I can't tell Ron, my husband, this, like, I sound like a crazy person. And you are so afraid. You want your baby so much. Mm-hmm. I wanted my baby so much. I had been through so much to get Sophie that I know that people around me must have been like, oh my God, she's a nutbag. Like, what is going on? But I didn't want to admit it. Like, I will tell you a story because I believe in like at least shedding some humor in every aspect of life. It saved me throughout my life. So and I hope you appreciate this, Danny. So one time, right after I had Sophie, she was probably like a month old. And I was like large and in charge. I hadn't lost my baby weight. I was walking. We lived by the Grove in Los Angeles, which is like an outdoor mall. And there was a girl that used to flirt with my husband. And this is like how off my rocker I was at the time. She was like walked out. She was like looking really good. I was a brand new mom. I was, you know, you're like nursing and you're like just feeling gross. And she goes, hi, Ron. And I turned around and I think I turned around and said, like, leave him alone. But it was literally like, it was my like, all the hormones. It was like my postpartum, like it was one of my first times out. And my husband kind of looked at me and he was like, what is wrong with you? And I just didn't like know. I didn't know how to deal. I didn't know how to function. And I think there's a lot of, and I tell this story because that's who I am. And I want to try and make people laugh and see light and stuff. But it is, if you are listening to this and you had a baby or you're you've gone through something, just know, like, it's just go get help. The minute yes. that you start to feel like, this is a weird feeling. Don't, mm-hmm. don't like wait. That's right. Mm-hmm. Wouldn't you say that?
I say, don't wait. Don't wait yeah. because the reason you shouldn't wait too is because postpartum depression can become a very chronic depressive thing for the rest of your life. And it's important for you to take care of yourself so that you can take care of that baby, you know? And yeah, I agree with you. Don't wait. And some of the steps I took was, thankfully I could recognize it in myself because I had the experience, but I reached out. You know, I called the doctor, I called my therapist, I called my doula, I called whoever would listen to me. I called them, you know, I had them come. I had my sister come and do my hair one time. You know, she will never understand how for that day that kept me going. You know, she just showed up at my house one day and saw my hair all over my head. And she was just like, oh, I'm doing your hair. You know what I mean? And allow people to do those particular things for you. And then eventually what happens is you'll start to do the things for yourself. You know, you'll start to go to the support group. You'll start to eat better. You'll start to want to have a glass of water instead of a glass of, you know, juice or wine or something that's not so good for you. You know, yeah, it's important to reach out and ask for help and keep asking for help, because a lot of times what happened was I would call the doctor and they're like, oh, well, you're just in the baby blues phase. Oh, you'll be okay. You know, it's only been 4 weeks in or 6 weeks in. Oh, you'll be fine. It's just your hormones. You know, people tend to negate you and dismiss exactly what you're trying to tell them. And that's the worst thing that the professionals in your world or the support people in your world can do, is dismiss you. So you have to find someone who sees you, who hears you, and that you can hold on to. Because if you don't, you're going to lose yourself. And that's the most question. Important thing.
Mm-hmm. Did they put you on medication, or did you go the route? What were the steps that you took to get yourself help, whether it be like just talking to somebody? Because sometimes mm-hmm. people need medication, like when they mm-hmm. are at that point where they're still mm-hmm. like seeing things like I was seeing or feeling the feelings that they were feeling. I needed mm-hmm. to be medicated. I was not at that time mm-hmm. Because I have a very good support system. And I found ways. I don't really know, looking back on it, how I got through that. But like you, I think that I had been through so much in my life already that I knew how to push things down. And I just did mm-hmm. because that's how mm-hmm. I survived. But I do think it's very offensive when people say, oh, you just have the baby blues. Because yes. not your hormones. Yeah. Some people just have hormonal issues. It's very, it's like a shock to your system when you have a baby, because you don't sleep. You're like, and if you choose to go the route of nursing, you're constantly up at night nursing a baby. A lot of women don't have the luxury of having a supportive husband, and they're doing it on their own. And it's like, you just can't do this. And this is why there used to be like families would live together, right?
Yes. Yes, exactly.
And the term, it takes a village. That's why the term it takes a village was invented, I think, because it does. It takes a village. Like your mother would help you feed the baby, and like families live together. And so if you're doing this by yourself, I don't even know how people do it. I mean, honestly.
Right. You were saying medication. Yeah. What were my steps?
Yeah.
What did I do? I already had a team in place, so I talked to whoever I needed to talk to. I went to my support group. I did not use medication. I'm super sensitive to medication, like even Tylenol. I don't know if I damaged like my liver when I tried to commit suicide a few years ago, back in what, 2008. But I'm very sensitive to medication, so I kind of stay away from that. But I also think medication is a crutch. If you need it, you use it. Get it, use it. It helps you through. But then what needs to happen is you need to put certain tools in place. Like if you're a yogi, if you like to write, if you're an exerciser, like to play tennis, if you like to go places, start doing those particular things. Force yourself to do those particular things. And sometimes it really is as simple as, I'm going to take a shower today. I'm going to get dressed today. I'm going to put some lip gloss on. So those are some of the things that I did. And when I was invited out to certain things, like the picture I sent you of me and Zoe, that was a modeling event that they invited me to do for a breastfeeding group. I did that. I went. Everything in me was like, stay home, stay in bed. You just want to cry. But no, my doula came and picked me up. And she said, you're going to go to this event. So I got dressed, got Zoe dressed, and went there. And it was the best day ever. They gave me a makeover. They had food there for me. They had doulas there to hold on to Zoe while I was getting all those pampering things done. So get out. Do things. And continue to talk. I would say continue to talk to people. You can't make certain people understand, right? Zoe's father could never relate and never really understand what I was going through, you know, so he wasn't even a safe place for me, but there were safe places like my group. And talking to your professionals, like your doctors and your midwives and your doulas and people like that, they have the resources. Sometimes you just have to make them see that you really need the resources so they don't dismiss you. And it's sad that you have to kind of force the issue, but you do have to force the issue. You have to take responsibility for your own mental health and your mental well-being. Because like you said, people will dismiss it. They will push you to the side. They will say, oh, you'll get over it. Oh, you know, it's a rite of passage for motherhood. No, it's not a rite of passage. I'm sick. I need the help. And so those are some of the things that I would suggest that people do. And those are the steps that I took. And I also made myself get on my yoga mat, even if I just sat there.
Okay. So yoga is like,
Yoga is really good for postpartum depression and anxiety because it gets you moving. Number one, number two, you invoke the nervous system to calm down because you're breathing. That breathing in and breathing out, the yogi breath helps to invoke your parasympathetic nervous system. And it starts to calm you. The more you breathe that way, the more you calm down and the more you can start to see clear. Now, there was a lot of times I would cry through my yoga sessions, but that's what my body needed to do. Because for me, I'm moving. You know, like I'm trying to get moving. I'm trying to do this. I'm trying to do that. I'm trying to distract myself. But what I really needed to do was sit still with myself and process all the emotions that were coming up for me.
How long was your postpartum? How long did you, so you did all of these things. And again, I'm going to say for certain people, like just because for myself, I am on medication. I'm hoping I can go off of it soon. I'm on Zoloft because I didn't have a choice. Like I had to go on something. Mm-hmm. So it's okay. Everyone has their own route that they want to take. And medication could just be a temporary thing till you get to the point where you can get to where, you know, you're doing the yoga. Some people just can't even, they have it so bad. They don't have the choice. Yeah.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So you know, there's, like you said, there's a degree to it. Some have it really, really mild and some have it so severe that you need that medication. You might move into psychosis without it. And that's even more of a dangerous place to be. So I'm not knocking medication. It was just not something I chose to do for myself.
You can kind of tell when you see other women that are dealing with postpartum. Like I just knew, like I had a friend that I would see all the time. And I knew her before she had the baby. And then it was like her third kid. And I would see her and it was like, kind of like, it's almost like there's nothing in your eyes when you see the people. So you have to know, like see the warning signs, like you said, like, how are you doing? Do you want me to come over and help? Like, do you want me to bring over a coffee? Like, other women really need to do a better job of, especially if you've gone through this, of supporting other women. You know, don't you agree?
I do. I definitely agree with that. Yeah, I mean, like I said, my sister came and did my hair. That was the most supportive thing that, you know, she could have done for me. You know, that was her way of giving to me. You know, I would have preferred if she had came and, you know, cooked some macaroni and cheese and, you know, had had a smorgasbord prepared for me. But her doing that hair, doing my hair, it just, it got me through that day. And
isn't it crazy too that you never forget the moments, like little moments in life? You don't, you'll never forget, like you remember that my sister came and did my hair. Like the little things in life that people can do for each other, like you remember those things in life.
Oh, and, yes.
Right? Mm-hmm.
Yes, we do. And I think I agree with you. I think we women need to be more supportive of each other in this particular phase in their lives. You know, it's not an easy transition. They say that when the baby is born, so is the mother. I don't agree with that because the mother has to make the transition, and she can't make that transition without the support of her village. She just can't do that, you know. So, yeah, I agree with you. I agree with you 100% there.
So about the steps of pointing, like of knowing there's an issue, where are you now? What are you doing now? So, and also I wanted to say, because I know what a doula is, but in case somebody's listening and they don't know what a doula is, can you explain what a doula is?
Sure.
Okay, I realized we didn't say that.
Yeah, we didn't say that. Okay. A doula is a professionally trained emotional support person for the mother. We have birth doulas. We have postpartum doulas. We even have death doulas. And what we do as a doula is we come in, we talk with the mother, we educate the mother about childbirth, about breastfeeding, about any issue that may or may not come up for her. After you have the baby, doulas do things like come and wash your dishes for you, come and hold the baby so you can take a shower, or just sit and talk to you and listen to what you have to say. So we're all about emotional support for the mother, which is something that's lacking in our medical system. Like we were talking about earlier, the doctors are designed to.
Yeah. Doula should just be on, like, now my whole thing makes sense where I was trying to explain. Now I look like a moron, but anyway, there should be doulas on staff. They should have a doula on staff that checks into every room after the mother and says, here are the signs.
I would really agree.
You have a baby and then you're kind of like, okay, what do I do now? Like, and then they send you home and you don't know what you're doing. And then you have to wait. You know what I'm saying? You have to wait to go see your pediatrician to get your baby weighed this time. Mm-hmm. But there's no manual unless you read one of those books. It's a very strange thing.
It is. It is a very strange thing. And I think that's, yeah, I think that there are actually hospitals now that have doulas on staff or volunteer doulas. I wouldn't say on staff, but definitely volunteer doulas that are on staff for support for women and for that support. But, you know, like you don't know what a doula, like some people don't know what a doula is. And if you don't know about it, the insurance company is not going to tell you about it, because the only way I knew that my insurance would even cover a doula is because I told them I had a history of depression. So then they said, oh, well, would you like this support system or would you like that support system? I was like, hell yeah, send me a doula. I love it.
But I didn't know. I knew what a doula was, but I assumed, I'm glad I'm asking at the very end of the episode, like what a moron, but I thought that a doula was only for somebody that had decided to go the natural birth, like the natural path. I did not know that. So I wish I would have asked you this an hour ago.
Yeah. A doula is there to support you the entire time, no matter whether you choose the natural route, a home birth, a hospital birth. We do it all. We're there to support the mother.
I didn't notice. Now I got tipped. I should have had a doula. Darn it. Danny.
We'll have another baby and I'll be your doula.
No, I have like one egg left and it's hard boiled. I think I'm good.
Right. So now to answer your question, where am I now? I'm in a very good space. I still have some of my issues, my challenges. There's time where I get really, really anxious. You know, I had another situation happen with Zoe. She's autistic. We got the diagnosis in February. So that was a shift for me. And again, I went to that place of blaming myself and this, that, and the other. But she's in speech therapy and occupational therapy. And we're learning how to communicate with each other. And she's picking up language every day. And she's awesome. But I also was assaulted in October. Me and Zoe were assaulted in October. So we were going through some court battles with protective orders and no contact orders and things of that nature. But I'm well. I'm doing really, really good. I have committed myself to serving the women that I serve and volunteering in the way that I volunteer and being 100% present for Zoe. So I'm in a really good space. And
I am so happened to, I mean, honestly, like we need to do a part two.
Okay. Let's do a part two.
I like this is percent should have to deal with as much as how much can a human take, but I love your attitude about connect you with mine awful.
Okay.
Because I think you need to connect.
Okay.
Cause she went through the whole, diagnosis as well. And just maybe you guys can connect and it'll be good for you. Cause it seems like it's okay. That's pretty new February.
Yeah. February is pretty new. Yeah.
But I love your attitude, everything about you. I think that you're an inspiration. I'm sorry. I waited until the end to actually understand. I thought I understood what a doula was, but I think that you're incredible. I really do. Oh. And I'm so grateful that we connected. I say this all the time. Everything happens for a reason. I say it every
yes.
episode.
Yes. Yes.
And then we kind of have become like internet friends or like messaging friends. And I think what you're putting out into the universe is so important. My question is, but before we close, is in the Black community, because they women don't understand a lot of times or people don't ask for help. Do you specifically, because I wanted to talk about your podcast at the end. Can you tell me about that? I think that your podcast is reaching out to a specific audience. That doesn't mean everybody can't listen to your podcast, but is it targeted towards women in the Black community that have dealt with postpartum depression? Can you explain that for my audience?
Sure, exactly. That's what it is. It's called Thrive After Postpartum. My target audience is Black women who are dealing with postpartum depression or anxiety, or other challenges as well. Just making that transition into motherhood. And I felt that it was important to start the podcast and to start the company and coach women around this place because it is still a stigma in our community. Any mental health disorder is a stigma in our community, and we don't talk about it. And one of the things that happens in the Black culture with Black women is we identify as strong. And anything that is unlike strength, such as crying or vulnerability or mental illness, that stuff kind of stuff goes to the back burner because we're culturally conditioned, even if it's a subconscious conditioning to just get up and keep going, get up and keep going and make these sacrifices. And in the end, what we do is we hurt ourselves, we damage our health, we damage our wellness, and then we damage the next generation because we can't be present for our children. So that's what my podcast is all about. And that's the community I serve. It's also, very near and dear to me because of the social justice aspect of the disparities in healthcare with Black women, the disparities in getting treatment for postpartum depression and anxiety. Black women tend to be 2 times, 50 to 60% more likely to actually have postpartum depression and not seek treatment. And it's a number of reasons because of the stigma, because we don't trust the healthcare system. And, you know, part of that too is our environments are more toxic. You know, we've got racism to deal with. We've got more poverty levels in our community. We got those particular things in our landscape. And so those outside stressors and those internal stressors contribute to having the higher rates of depression in our community. So I'm passionate about that because I love kids. And I was a kid who didn't have a mother who could be present, who didn't have the support that she needed to be present for us. And I want to help shape women in such a way that they can be present for their own children.
You know, it just takes like messaging, the correct messaging out there, having the conversations. There's so many people that want things in our world to change. Like there is racism. There is all of, I mean, our country is like a complete hot mess right now. It's like, where do you even start? You know, I don't even, this is a whole separate episode, but hearing you doing what you're and listening to your podcast, just getting the messaging out there, you're doing great and amazing things. And you said earlier in the podcast, when you talked about like wanting to end your life and why am I here? And like, this is your purpose. You're supposed to be doing this. You're supposed to be helping women in your community. And I'm just really freaking proud of you. And the word freaking, but I'm using that because I don't want to use the other F word. You're amazing. You're my new best friend.
Only, you know what? I love it because you can make me cry and laugh all in the same breath. And I just love that. I love that feeling. Thank you, Megan. Thank you.
Thank you for coming on. And I'm not kidding. Like, I really do want to have a second episode with you. And in closing, I'm going to say thanks, Danny. You're amazing. I've said it like 5 times in a row, but I really mean it. And keep doing what you're doing. And in closing, everyone, keep living, keep praying, and keep growing. So I talk a lot about how much therapy saved my life and how lucky I am to have my amazing therapist, Dr. Nay. But not everybody can get an appointment with Dr. Nay, and I really wanted to break the stigma on getting help or asking for help. So that is why I partnered with a company called online-therapy.com. They have plans that start around $30 a week, and you can get weekly therapy sessions for less than $50 a week. You can also get my 20% off code by going to my website, judgingmegan.com, and you go to the therapy tab. And if you click on the link at the bottom, you can get 20% off your first month.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
When you visit Arizona, time is measured in moments, not minutes. Like the moment you see the Grand Canyon for the first time. Visit a new state of mind. Learn more at hereyouareaz.com.